This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we'll talk with a researcher from the University of South Florida in Tampa about a new study that's exploring whether solving brain games and puzzles on a computer could reduce the chances of developing dementia, like Alzheimer's, or delay the loss of function associated with the disease. It's getting underway soon, and they're looking for participants, and we'll learn more about that later. But first, temporary protected status for Haitians living and working in the United States will end on July 22nd of this year. These are people who have been given refuge here in the United States after an earthquake struck the island nation in 2010. People from Haiti were given the right to work, their children were able to attend school, and thousands of families in Florida hold mortgages on homes. The end of temporary protected status was set by President Donald Trump for July 22nd of this year, meaning that there are 6 months left for Haitians to make arrangements to leave the U.S. WGCU is following how this looming deadline is impacting our area, our neighbors, and our coworkers through a series that we're calling Where is Home? Haitians Counting Down. Our goal is to tell the stories of Haitians having to deal with uprooting their lives after 9 years of living here in the U.S. We looked at the history of Haiti, the current state of the country, and talked with people about the options that they're exploring. Go back to Haiti or move somewhere else. Well, now with half a year left to make those final decisions, we're spending this half hour talking with an immigration attorney about what options exist and what she's seeing people deal with as they plan for an eviction from this country where they've built lives, started families, and paid taxes since 2010. Indira DeMine is an immigration attorney in Fort Myers who can help us understand some of the obstacles to just picking up and leaving or trying to stay. Indira, thanks for joining us. It's great to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, we invite our listeners to join the conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So for starters, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and why you became an immigration attorney?
Sure. I immigrated to the United States in 2002 with my family. I'm from a tiny country called Guyana in South America. I completed high school in New York City, went on to college in New York City, and took a year off and decided I wanted to become an attorney. Throughout my undergrad, I was undocumented. My family was undocumented. So immigration was something that I lived with, immigration law, dealing with immigration. It's something that was very much present in my household. When I did finally become a legal resident of the United States, I decided I wanted to go to law school. In law school, I took immigration classes and decided immigration was what I wanted to pursue. I graduated in 2012 at the ripe age of 24.
Wow.
And I went straight into immigration law. I worked for a local firm practicing immigration, all areas from removal defense, persons facing deportation in courts, to family petitions, to investor visas, to everything you can think about immigration related. And about a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, I decided I wanted to open my own firm just focusing on immigration. I don't practice any other areas of law. I just love immigration. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something that I deal with every day. And it's something that my family deals with. So it's very much a passion of mine.
Well, it's an interesting field because it's somewhat stagnated in certain ways, but then it's also been changing a bit in recent years.
Absolutely, yeah. Just keeping up with the changes has been quite an adventure. But you're right, in certain areas, there hasn't been changes for many, many years. In certain areas, we need change, right? And then in others, we're just trying to keep up with everything that's being announced by the new administration.
So we're talking about temporary protected status, right? And as it relates to Haitians here in our community, are you hearing from people that are here under TPS from Haiti?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, I have a large Haitian clientele that I meet with.
Are they making plans or hoping that the deadline's getting pushed back again?
A little bit of both. I meet people that are hopeful that, something will happen in the meantime. And also meet people, folks that are making plans and have made plans, and a lot of people that have left. The bottom line is that there's nothing to return to in Haiti, so they've made alternative plans to relocate to another country.
So it was originally supposed to end this month?
Technically, the work permit expiration date was set to expire this month. So if you had a work permit, a lot of folks have work permits that were set to expire in January 2019. However, the expiration of the program is July 22nd, 2019, as announced by the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay. So when temporary protected status is granted for a natural disaster or a war, when does the United States deem an end date should be set for granting refuge for these people? When they extend the TPS, do they have in mind when that's going to end?
Not necessarily. And in the past, what has happened is the Department of Homeland Security will assess the situation, write a report, and the Department of Homeland Security, in conjunction with the Department of State, because the Department of State is also monitoring the home the country, and they also write their own reports. And there's not necessarily, by 2020, we're hoping that things are fixed and we're going to cancel the program. It's more of what is the situation in Haiti? Do we need to extend the program? And if so, they'll extend, and then we'll reevaluate in a short period of time.
So what kind of criteria does the Department of State look at and Homeland Security? What kind of things are they looking for, like particularly with Haiti? Are they looking for basic infrastructure or economic stability?
A little bit of both, but basic infrastructure, you hit on that, is extremely important. What is the situation? The roads, the schools, the medical facilities, the government's ability to take care of its people, the police, policing groups in Haiti, with the job prospects, economic growth of the country, all of those things are important. And the reality is, Haiti has been stagnant or very poor growth since the earthquake.
Yeah, I've talked with people who've been down to Haiti since the earthquake, and they say that things are getting better, but it's just not happening at the rate that perhaps a person from the State Department might expect. But
right.
So has there been a report done, though, that says Haiti's A-OK, so we're going to end TPS? I mean, does that exist somewhere?
So the Department of Homeland Security every time they have to reevaluate whether or not to extend TPS, there is an internal report. And that's what has caused some controversy because of what's in the report, right? Now, in the past, you'd write whatever is in the report, whoever is evaluating Haiti would write the report, and that's what you would submit, and a decision is made whether or not to extend TPS. Now, what's happened and what caused a flurry of lawsuits is what was actually said in the report. There's been some back and forth as far as email exchange between persons in the Department of Homeland Security wanting to sort of sugarcoat what's happening in Haiti, making the language a little bit more appealing so that there could be a discontinuation of the program. And this email correspondence was discovered after the lawsuit was filed. There was a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, basically requesting all of these email correspondence. And what you see is, trying to find favorable language showing some economic growth in Haiti, showing that things have improved enough to justify the discontinuation of the program.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Are you referring to the non-jury trial that's underway right now at a federal court in Brooklyn?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Yeah, okay, so I have some excerpts from those emails. A couple of the quotes are from administration official emails saying, quote, "The problem with that analysis," one Trump appointee to the Department of Homeland Security wrote in an October 2017 email, quote, "is that it reads as though we'd recommend an extension of TPS because we talk so much about how bad it is," end quote. Quote, "The basic problem is that it is bad there," another official responded. And it quotes again, "we can try to get more and or comb through the country conditions we have, again, looking for positive gems, but the conditions are what they are," end quote. So those are some of those emails that you were referring to that came out in that investigation and through that trial.
Right. So exactly. And it's sad because, again, they're pulling at straws. How can we make this report in such a way in such a way that we can justify this discontinuation of the program, which is not at all what the report should be. The report should be a report on the situation in Haiti. The report should be on the economic growth, the infrastructure. What is the situation in Haiti? An accurate, honest depiction of what is going on in Haiti. That is what the report is supposed to be. And then based on that, are we going to extend TPS or are we going to discontinue it? What we're seeing happening is a tailoring of the report to match what the Department of Homeland Security wants to do, which is ultimately to terminate the program.
I mean, I don't know how this particular trial may shake out, but do you have a feeling that these emails might cause a problem for the government trying to end the TPS in July?
Absolutely. And if for one thing you're seeing through the emails is that not everybody in the Department of Homeland Security is agreeing that situations have improved such that TPS should be discontinued. You're seeing voices through those emails that says, you know, no, this is actually what's happening, you know. So if anything, you're seeing discord in the Department of Homeland Security that not everybody's in agreement there. Now, how far is this email going to take this lawsuit? I don't know. You know, yeah. The emails by itself, you know, it doesn't look good. It's not a good reflection on the administration. Now, legally, does the administration have a right to discontinue the program? And I think that's what it's going to boil down to, and that's up to the judge ultimately. So it's hard for me to tell.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch how that shakes
out.
So I'm going to shift now and ask a question about the children who are born to people here in the U.S. under TPS.
Right.
According to data from the Center for American Progress, there are 859 children in Lee County that were born to people here on TPS. And in Collier County, they say that there have been 791 U.S.-born children. Overall, including DeSoto and Sarasota counties, about 2,000 U.S.-born children were born to Southwest Florida to Haitian TPS recipients. As I'm wondering now, if those parents are deported, what happens to those kids?
So one of the things I talk to my families about who are on TPS and are not sure what's going to happen is those are conversations you need to have. Those are arrangements need to be made. Talking to your family, figuring out what is our plan, because what ultimately happens to those children are, you know, they can return with parents, which none of the parents want their kids to return with them because they're not even sure where they're going to live. So option one, return with parents. Option two, remain in the United States in the custody of a family member, which if that's the case, I urge my parents to, you know, have that in writing, have some sort of written document. Or option three, if there's no family members that can adequately care for the child will then go into the foster care system. So not very great options, mm-hmm. but what I encourage people to do is at least be talking about it. So you're not, you know, on the next flight out with no idea what's going to happen to your child.
And I'm wondering also, what is the Haitian policy towards U.S. children coming to Haiti to live? I mean, can they just go ahead and go because their parents are going there?
You know, I don't know for sure. However, I've had a few conversations with spouses who are U.S. citizens, and what I've learned from them is that the process is a lot easier for them to get Haitian citizenship versus their Haitian spouse to get American citizenship.
So I'm wondering also about other countries. So if there's a Haitian here in Florida and they're looking at, they don't want to go back to Haiti, and so they're looking at someplace else, maybe they want to go to yeah. Brazil or Peru. How easy is it for someone who's been under TPS status here in the U.S. to go somewhere else? I mean, even Canada.
Yes. Canada is a country that keeps coming up with a lot of the Haitian folks in our area. That seems to be the country that a lot of folks are attracted to. And that's because Canada has a favorable refugee laws. I don't practice there, so I can't tell you in detail about mm-hmm. them, but they do have more favorable laws, refugee laws, so a lot of people are attracted to Canada. I know Brazil, for one, if you're there's a process, but Haitian immigrants can seek residency in Brazil. I've had people go to the Dominican Republic, Sint Maarten, other countries in Central and the Caribbean. But yeah, not a lot of folks returning directly to Haiti.
Yeah, that's got to be a really tough decision. I mean, you're counseling some of these parents who are looking at this and trying to figure out what's the best thing for their child, you know?
Yeah. It's...
I can't imagine having to have that conversation.
No, it's not. It's not easy. And I find what is happening is a lot of people, and just because of the uncertainty, you know, one minute it's the program is canceled, but now there's this lawsuit. So, you know, I find that a lot of people are still in denial, which I try to not get them out of denial. But I find a lot of folks are thinking, no, you know, something will happen. It'll be figured out. God will, you know, help us out, and I try to get folks to realize this is the reality, and this is really happening now. And I think because they've had TPS for so long, right? In the last 8 to 9 years, folks have bought houses, started businesses, you know, send their kids to colleges. I mean, they've done so much within that time with that work permit that they've been given that it's very hard for them to, you know, even comprehend that this is going to be taken away.
Well, it's kind of building a life, you know.
Exactly.
If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Fort Myers immigration attorney Indira Demine. We're discussing the end of temporary protected status for Haitians living in the United States. TPS is currently set to end in July. And if you'd like to weigh in on our conversation, the number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So I want to dig in a little to those numbers, people that are here from Haiti on TPS. Again, according to that data from the Center for American Progress, there are just over 32,400 Haitian TPS holders in the state of Florida. Their employment rate tends to stay at a little bit more than 65%. There are 21,900 workers in Florida that are Haitian TPS holders, and $1.2 billion would be lost from the state GDP annually without the Haitian workers who hold TPS. As far as where they're working, 32.7% of Haitian workers with TPS work in the accommodation and food services, 13.1% work in retail trade, and 10.6% work in healthcare and social assistance. And data aside, we're talking about human beings, all of whom have their own story. And I'd like to have us listen back to a story that was captured a month ago by WGCU's Andrea Perdomo. As many people celebrated the holidays with friends and family, for about 3,000 Haitians living in Southwest Florida, it may have been their last holiday season in the United States. This is a story of a 26-year-old woman who's living in Collier County who's dealing with this looming deadline.
26-year-old Watts Mercy spent this Thanksgiving as many others did, with loved ones. But she couldn't help but think about her future.
I want to experience a lot more, and it's kind of like a person living out their last year, their last 8 months on Earth, and these could be my last moments of luxury, in a way. Like in Haiti, you don't have clean clothes, clean water, bathrooms that run, lights, a pool that's outside right now. So these aren't things that I take for granted.
Her mother brought her to the United States from Haiti when Watts was just 4 years old. By the time she was 12, her mother was deported. But with some help, she was able to receive temporary protected status in 2011 when she was 19. While her TPS status allowed her to work and get a driver's license, the temporary part of her legal status was something she always had in the back of her mind.
There's always been those moments of, should I do this or should I not? Is this gonna end if I have to go back? Should I sign a lease right now? And especially in the past 2 years, I have learned to not let those unknowns keep me back. I don't have that luxury of knowing to plan my next 5 years or my next 10 years, because I have no idea where my life could turn at any moment.
The uncertainty of her life has led her to embrace the unknown, and she has even come to see beauty in not knowing what's next. TPS for Haitians was originally set to end earlier this year in January.
And so I was preparing my sister, I was preparing to move, I was preparing to leave her with good people that she could keep going to school with, because I never want to stay here illegally. It's just not who I am, and I talk too much to ever do that.
The January deadline was moved, but Watt says her main concern was for her U.S.-born 17-year-old sister, over whom she has power of attorney.
That's what I had prayed for. I was like, God, just allow Sarah to graduate so that she doesn't have to worry about anything.
Now TPS is set to end for Haitians in July, which means Watts will get to see her sister graduate from high school this spring. She says she doesn't dread the future.
I think that I still have a lot of purpose in my life. Like, I don't think God brings us this far to just drop us. And so whatever happens, whether I'm here or I do move back to Haiti, or I move to a different country, I pray that I can live out my best potential.
Watts has set up roots in Naples, where she has friends and an apartment. But she says her thoughts are with TPS recipients that have invested their lives in the U.S.
I don't have a husband. I don't have a house. I don't have children here that need me. But my heart goes out to those people that do have that security here. Their children don't know anything else, and they may have to leave them. And those are the people that I tell my story for.
She says she worries for others who have more to lose when they are sent back to Haiti or other countries. She says these are people who may never have their voices heard.
Who are those people that don't have my story? Who are those people that just have a family in a trailer in Immokalee? Or they're working in the fields and they've built their lives here, the little life that they do have.
As for her life, Watts says for now, it's all about spending time with the family and friends she has in the United States during this holiday season and for the next 6 months. Andrea Perdomo, WGCU News, Vero Beach.
That was WGCU's Andrea Perdomo talking with Collier County resident and Haitian national Watts Mercy, who's here under TPS. And if you've just tuned in, we're exploring the pending end to temporary protected status for Haitians living in the United States, set to end this coming July. And we're talking with immigration attorney Indira Demine. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, you can give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Indira, does that story sound familiar to you?
Yes. Actually, I know her because I've met with her and I've talked about her case with her. But absolutely, that's a case. That scenario is something that I hear very often.
One of the aims that we set out with at the beginning of this project, which we're calling Where is Home? Haitians Counting Down, was to get the human side of all of this data. I mean, there are a lot of numbers you can look at, but
right.
We want to learn more about who these people are, where they're working, things like that. I went over where people are working earlier statewide. Do you feel like here in our area, Haitian TPS holders tend to be working more in the healthcare industry? Because I've been anecdotally told that, but I'm not sure if it's true.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That is something I've seen, is a lot of Haitian immigrants are in the healthcare field. And we have one of the largest employer in our area, Lee Health. And I know they don't have exact data as far as how many TPS holders they hire. However, there's a large number of Haitian immigrants that are in the healthcare field.
And I'm wondering, when a TPS holder is working here, they're paying taxes and they're paying into Social Security. Are they ever going to see the Social Security benefits from their near decade of labor here if they're sent away?
No, ma'am. No, absolutely not. And yes, you're right. They are paying into Social Security, Medicaid. And again, there's data about how much, you know, Social Security and Medicaid contributions they've made over the years. But like you said, there's the data, the hard data, and there's the human side of things. But yeah, they probably would never see those contributions.
Well, here's another piece of information that comes out of the numbers. There are 4,000 households of Haitian TPS holders in Florida that have mortgages. What happens for a TPS holder when they have to leave the country and they have a mortgage on a house? Are they expected to sell that house, or can they make arrangements to maintain that asset?
You know, again, that's another thing I talk to my clients about. Who has power of authority? Can you designate someone to have power of authority to sell your house if you need to get access to your bank accounts? Because what you see happening is, you know, dad might be the main worker and, you know, the mortgage is in his name. He gets deported. No one can access his bank account. No one can access anything. So that's a conversation I've been having with my clients. to make sure they are making those arrangements. But the reality is, if there's no one to make the mortgage payments, that house can go into foreclosure. So this is not just having an impact on the Haitian immigrant community. This is going to have an impact on our economic stability here in Southwest Florida.
What's going to happen if, say, for example, there's a Haitian person that's here on TPS, they get deported, or they, you know, on July 22nd, they pick up and leave, and their house is there, or they're taken out of the country, but they didn't make arrangements for their house. That house just sits there, or does the United States take possession of that house, or how does that work?
My understanding is if there's a mortgage on the house, and payments are not being made on time, the house will go back to the bank. So basically being placed in foreclosure if the payments are not being made. But there are no exceptions or any sort of things for someone, you know, for their immigration status, if they're deported or so on. They are still responsible. There are still those financial responsibilities that they have here in the United States that do not just disappear if the person is deported or sent back.
So the person is deported, sent back, but they are able to make payments from overseas. Can they maintain that asset here in Florida?
You know, they may be able to. Now, as far as how are they going to be making the payments, it would be through a family member. Would they ever be able to return and, you know, sell their house or, you know, live in their house? I don't know. I would have to see their immigration history. Most likely not, because they were here undocumented before they got TPS. So what could happen? I guess technically if they keep making the payments, they could keep their house, but can they then in the future come and, you know, obtain that home or sell that home? I'm not sure.
I'm wondering if having property in the house, I mean, having a house or having a piece of property in the United States gives them any kind of advantage to get maybe even a tourist visa.
So what I tell, actually, to get a tourist visa, no, it does not. Because to get a tourist visa, you have to establish strong ties to your home country. Because
Oh, okay.
The United States wants to ensure that you're not going to come overstay your visa because you have strong ties to America.
Yeah.
So you're establishing strong ties in Haiti or your home country when you're applying for a tourist visa. Now, I tell my clients that, the more ties you have to the United States, the harder it is to be deported. Now, that doesn't mean there's a law that says if you have a home, you can't be deported, so everybody should buy homes. What I'm saying is, if you are facing deportation and you're in front of a judge, and that judge sees, look, I have 3 kids, 1 in college, I work, I pay my taxes every year, I own a house, I'm paying mortgage, I don't miss my mortgage payment, I own a small business. I mean, someone that is contributing economically to society, it's harder for a judge to say, nope, I'm going to go ahead and deport you, than it is to say for someone that has no ties to the United States. So I encourage clients to make those strong ties, because if you are placed in deportation proceedings, you know, again, the judge is a human being and a taxpayer, right? And if you mm-hmm. see someone contributing, you want that person to remain in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the luck of the draw. You don't know what judge you're going to get.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Such a good point. And especially now, because of the increase in how many people are being placed in deportation, there's been an increase in the number of judges in the Miami court that has jurisdiction for our area. So a lot of new judges have been transferred over or just have been appointed. So, yeah, it's the luck of the draw.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, have you had much luck in getting people from TPS into a green card situation, or dare I say citizenship?
Sure. If they do have a pathway, and just so I'm clear, the pathways are limited, but there are some pathways. So if someone is married to a U.S. citizen, there might be a pathway. The person can petition for them. So, yes, I have had, instances where I've been able to transition from TPS to permanent residence and eventually even citizenship.
Yeah, it's Do people, though, also maybe kind of try to fly under the radar, too, and just stay on TPS till the very last minute? Do they have to start preparing now?
But, you know, I find that if someone has a pathway, they will gather the filing fees. They will find the funding to pursue that pathway. I find that people that have a valid pathway will pursue it. However, if you don't have a pathway at all, you know, trying to fly under the radar, go unnoticed, just following the laws and hope that no one sees you is the only option. So for those people, that's what they're doing.
I want to ask you a little bit about some of the other countries that are still under TPS. There's El Salvador, Honduras, Nepal, Nicaragua, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Do we have very many people in our area from any of these countries? I mean, we chose to focus on Haiti because we know that we have a pretty big population, especially out in the eastern Collier County. But are there any people from any of these other countries that you're seeing?
Yes, but not as many as the Haitian immigrants. But yes, we have people from El Salvador and Honduras. Those are the two main ones. Nicaragua, not so much the African countries that have TPS, but a few, not as big or large as the Haitian population.
So we're hearing a lot in the news about people coming from South and Central America seeking asylum. Would the fact that their country is under TPS, like Honduras or El Salvador, have any bearing on asylum claims?
Not at all. No.
No. That's completely different situation.
Yeah.
Do they already have to be here to claim TPS?
Right. So when TPS was announced for Haitian immigrants, it was in 2010. When it was announced, you had to have physically been in the country at that time in order to be placed on the TPS program. So if you came in 2001, if you missed the cutoff registration period by a day, You are not designated a TPS holder. So for persons crossing the borders today, it has no bearing that their country was designated TPS country.
I'm wondering what it's like for you as an immigration attorney watching the politics play out over all of this and all of the screaming on social media from one side and or the other. There's a lot, and there's a serious amount, it seems like, of misinformation and misunderstanding.
Yes.
Is that frustrating for you?
Oh, so much. I'm so glad you mentioned that. The misinformation that's out there, just from everyday folks. And, you know, I'm also a taxpayer, resident of Southwest Florida. I have a child, so I want to live in a safe neighborhood. I also have all of those fears that other Americans have. However, it's misplaced. It's completely misplaced. Persons that are on TPS go through a rigorous background check. If they have misdemeanor charges, they could be placed off the program. They could be kicked off the program. So these are people that have gone through a thorough background check over and over again. Every 2 years, they go through a background check, right? So they've maintained good moral character. These are people that, pay taxes, that are, law-abiding persons. So there's so much misinformation out there that it's so frustrating. And any opportunity that I have to educate just my neighbors and my friends and, just our local community, I think is so important.
Well, we really appreciate the time that you've spent with us today to help sort through a couple of these things. I want to thank my guest, Indira Demine. She is an immigration attorney based in Fort Myers. Indira, thanks so much for sharing your time with us.
Louie, thank you for having me.
When we return, WGC's Mike and Irie talks with a USF researcher about a new study that she's leading about how playing brain games on a computer might be able to stave off dementia like Alzheimer's. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.